Snap back to Crouch, dumps it over the middle, crossing pattern, caught Dudek with a catch, 45-50, up the right sideline, 40, and out of bounds, Ball State 32-yard line. Dudek runs up on it with a catch of the 15, 20, 25, back across the field to the right, 30, goes by the official, 35-40, midfield, 40 of Ball State, cuts back left, all the way down to the Ball State 35-yard line, 54 yards. For Morgan Hagee of Ball State to tie it. Snap back. Kick all the way. And it's blocked. It is blocked. It is bouncing around on the turf. And the ball game is over. And the Illini have won it.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. 61 degrees back in studio today with Illini football later on tonight. Kickoff at 7 o'clock. Our coverage gets underway at 5:30. So a full 2-hour show today. You can join us at 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357. Lauren Tate, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Just a busy weekend, and just a lot going on from just baseball, football, and volleyball, and just kind of run the gamut there.
Yeah, I know. I wore myself out watching volleyball last night, watched tennis in the afternoon. Cardinals won, Milwaukee won, Colorado won. That's the race.
Yeah, and Colorado was losing 4-1 in that game.
They caught up in a hurry and went ahead, 5-4 winner.
The Dodgers now have lost 8 straight, 13 of their last 14 games.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, but they're not. I mean, they could be a quick out. I mean, they're just the Diamondbacks have won 13 of 14. They won 13 in a row before the losing last night.
So these wins count right now in the playoffs?
They don't.
Oh,
no.
Oh,
no, the wins right now don't count.
Okay,
but
they still got to face Kershaw the first game, right?
Yeah, but his overall career postseason record isn't very good.
Yeah, I'd hate to have him pitching for me in the
playoff. I know.
I'd hate to have that, man. I mean, he's been terrible in the playoffs.
Well, he hasn't
been good. That's a sure loss.
No, it's not a sure loss, but, I mean, you can look at his record, look at his stats.
I know.
He hasn't been good in the postseason.
I know. I wish the Cardinals had him. That's all.
I agree. I would like to have him.
Which way is it? You want him or you don't want him?
I didn't say I didn't want him. I just said he hasn't been good in the playoffs. That's two different things.
Okay.
But I'd rather have that guy on the mound than someone who's not experienced on the mound in the playoffs. And if the Cardinals make the playoffs, you know, the rotation's going to be interesting. Wainwright's still not back.
I mean, well, I hope not.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't want Wainwright pitching.
No,
I don't want Leak pitching. I'm glad he's gone. I mean, Weaver's a lot better than those guys.
You know what? And I was just going to mention his name, and he's pitched really well of late, and he's doing a good job. And I know there were questions early in the season, is he just a reliever? But he's doing great as a starter right now.
The only problem with Weaver is they didn't bring him up soon enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, think about they brought up sooner what they'd be in the wild card race, or even the division for that matter.
Yeah, yeah, they went with Leak a long time to try to sell him. You know, they wanted to keep him in the rotation so he'd be valuable to sell.
You know,
it cost him a lot of wins, boy. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and his first start with the Mariners last week went pretty well, actually, for Leak.
It's okay. So he doesn't pitch for the Cardinals.
Yeah, he's long gone. And I know the wins don't matter right now because you got to do it in the playoffs. But the Indians have won 16 in a row, which is the longest streak since the Oakland A's won 20 straight in 2002.
Yeah, I'm not following that. I don't know what's happening. I know they got a good team, but my goodness.
Baseball is such an interesting game, and it's pitching, as you say, over and over again. And momentum is only good as the next day's starter. And so it's really hard to win 16 games in a row. Even though it's a regular season, you're not facing great pitching every night. But that's hard to do.
Not following it close enough to know what happened there. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll watch the Indians. It's just really interesting to see what they're doing there. And where do you have the Cardinals? I mean, do you have them finding a way to get into the playoffs in your mind?
No.
They're only three back of the wild card right now.
I know.
Yeah, I don't.
But I mean, they certainly have a chance.
Yeah, they've won 7 out of 9, but I keep going. What are they doing? Like, how? I mean, the pitching.
It comes and goes. If you look at their lineup, they got an unknown at third base. You know, they got an unknown at second base. Wong's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing different people at first base. I don't know. They got different outfielders. I just don't know. I don't think they'll make it.
Well, Carpenter has the shoulder issue. He got a shot the other day. We'll see how that works out. And then Wong has the back issue. He's supposed to maybe be back today. We'll see how that goes. So that should be interesting. And I just like you mentioned, all
the team from Memphis is the same as the team for the St. Louis Cardinals.
True. And that team, it
all goes back to the pitching.
Yeah.
They bring Weaver out there last night, and he shuts them out for nearly six innings, and you win the game.
You know, Carlos Martinez was really good in an outing several days ago. He was really good. And
yeah.
I mean, if they get that kind of pitching the rest of the way, that's fine, but I don't know what's going to hold up in
the
playoffs.
The problem with the Cardinals is they have to beat more than one team.
Yeah.
That's the trick. And they're probably going to have to catch Colorado because they're not going to catch the Cubs.
No. No. I mean, the Cubs are easily the better team there. They're just not pulling away.
They're not playing great.
They're not pulling away, but they're the better team on paper, easily.
Well, yeah, but the Cardinals are among the worst teams on paper if you analyze who they're playing. I saw a lineup the other day, and I didn't know four of the guys.
The Mejia? I mean, who's that guy? Like, he played last night. And
I don't know.
It's
I'm exaggerating, but I mean, it is true that if you look at the lineup, look where the players that are in the lineup now started the season. Look where Pham started. He's their best player.
Mm-hmm.
Look where he started the season. Practically all those guys started in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I mean, it's a...
Biscotti's been in and out, hit a big home run the other night. I mean, it's just strange how this is happening.
The Cardinals lineup last night, Carpenter was back in the lineup, but you're getting bullpen help from Ryan Sheriff, who has pitched well for the most part since he's come up, and then Nicasio, who just got come over from the Phillies.
Yeah, had him for a couple days, and already he's closer.
Yeah, and he can't be on the playoff roster, but he can help him get to the playoffs. Jose Martinez, I mean, he played at first base last night. What a season he's having. So
why are we talking about baseball when there's so much going on?
I don't know. Let's move on. Let's just stop that conversation, because honestly, the Cubs are going to win. I'm going to tell you right now, the Cubs are going to win the division. The Cardinals are going to make the playoffs, and we're all going to move on with their lives, because it's only going to matter to Cub fans in the postseason. Well, the Illini football team plays tonight, as we mentioned. At 7 o'clock, they play Western Kentucky. That's going to be an interesting matchup. We'll get full in-depth into that game later in the program. Dave Revson is going to join us at 10:30. Jay Lehman's going to join us in studio this week. He's on at 9:30. Be good to talk to Jay to get his thoughts on the Illini, what he saw last week, because he was here doing the game last week. So Jay's going to be here for back-to-back games, calling the game for Big Ten Network. Coming up in about 8 or 10 minutes or so, Kevin Hambly, the Stanford head coach, will be joining us at 9:15. They got the victory last time over the Illinois volleyball team, 3-0. But Lauren, the Illini had a late lead in both of the first two sets and were down 23-22 in the second set. And the Stanford is a better team. They're defending champs. They lost some players off of that team. But the Illini really gave Stanford all they could handle last night and threatened. If they could have finished one of those first two sets at least,
they really had the best chance with the first set. Of course, they were ahead 23-21. But it just seemed like when Stanford had to score, they had some awfully big girls, and they jumped awfully well. The one gal was 6'8" on the corner, and the only thing I will say about Illinois is they got tremendous play from Bastianelli. She was really good. She blocked a bunch, 6, I believe, had 15 kills, high percentage, really good player. And the setting of Poulter was extraordinary, really good. Now, beyond that, Illinois is good. Understand, they're good, but when you're competing against the top four team like Stanford and defending national champion, they don't have that dominant killer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those strikes and those blocks from the corners were just too much to overcome.
Yeah,
and I'm afraid that since there are 7 or 8 teams in the Big Ten that are ranked, that were ranked at least, it's going to be hard for Illinois to get in that upper division.
But
I will tell you this, there's been a lot of talk about the fact they have 9 freshmen. The freshmen aren't freshmen that are starting for Illinois.
Yeah.
These are people that they've had.
Yeah, Allie Bastianelli had 15 kills to lead the Illini last night. They had 48 as a team. Beth Prince had 13. Jacqueline Quaid had 11. But the Illini dropped straight sets, 25-23, 25-23, and then 25-22. It was Stuff Huff last night, a great crowd, students and fans, 4,152 fans. The 13th match in program history with attendance over 4,000. It was the 7th best attended match in program history, a part of the Big Ten Pac-12 Challenge.
And so, getting out of there was a problem last night, the parking. Oh, boy. One outlet in that huge parking lot. The fact that the end zones, one entire section of end zone seats was filled by the Illinois football team.
That's true. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you brought that up. Lovie Smith was
there. Right down on the corner.
Yep. And, so that's great to see. That, you know, I think both basketball teams were there last night. At least some of the players from each team was there. So that's good to see as well.
Saw Don Harden, but I wanted to tell you that Mike Hebert was not there.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike suffered a relapse two nights ago and had to be taken to the hospital. He has Parkinson's and early Alzheimer's, and he intended to be here. They were planning to come 3 days ago. As I said, he had a real setback, and he's hoping to be better and to be here later. He really, his wife Sherry told me that he spent the week talking about coming back to Illinois and how much he looked forward to it, and then this happened. And he's not well.
It happened 2 days before the match, you said?
It happened
or is it
night before last, in the
Thursday.
Middle of the night.
Okay, all right. Well, that's unfortunate. I know you mentioned that he was going to be there, and it was a great, you know, opportunity for a lot of people to go because Kevin was coming back, and for what Kevin did the program, so it would have been good for Mike to be there. So we wish him all the best, and hopefully he's able to come later this season.
Yeah, I was making arrangements to talk to him, and then she said, well, of course, he just couldn't come. Yeah. He was in the hospital.
Well, the also a part of that Big Ten Pac-12 Challenge, Colorado lost to Penn State yesterday in the match tonight. Penn State and Stanford, if you weren't at the Illini football game, I think you'd probably want to go to that match. That could be a really good one.
Penn State's already beaten Stanford this year.
Yeah, that's true. Now, Stanford wasn't at full strength in it, I believe. Is that correct? One of their best players.
Yeah, yes. That gal was back last night, and I forget her name, but she's 6'8", and she really looks big on that corner.
It's Lutz is her name, I believe. I think she was the one that was out, I think. Catherine Plummer had 14 kills last night to lead to Stanford. Well, some other big news last night. I want to definitely mention this. Congratulations to Kevin Anderson. Kevin Anderson did something last night that he has not done, and really no Illini tennis player has ever done. Here's Kevin Anderson yesterday at the U.S. Open.
Never played a point like this before. A monument to perseverance and power tennis. Conquers his nerves, and in his 34th major, is it being his first final?
Definitely, you know, amazing feeling being in this position, and you know, I've worked very hard to get here. You know, it feels great to be in the stage I'm in, and you know, more importantly, I've given myself a shot at you know, being in the finals. And You know, on Sunday I'll be playing for a Grand Slam trophy, so that's obviously an amazing feeling. And I mean, I have to get ready. It's still obviously a very difficult match ahead of me, but I think right now I'm just trying to unwind a little bit and just enjoy sort of today's match.
That's former Illini Kevin Anderson advanced to the U.S. Open final, defeating Pablo Carreño Busta last night. The win marks Anderson's first appearance in a Grand Slam event final and the first player in Illinois tennis history to achieve the feat. Plays tomorrow against Rafael Nadal tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. He's a first player also, Lauren, which is an interesting fact to me, the college ties to reach a Grand Slam final since Todd Martin of Northwestern in the 1999 U.S. Open.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is.
You'd think that college would turn out most of the top players, but that's not true.
No.
It hasn't been true. It's more true now than it was before, I think.
He is the highest-seeded player in U.S. Open history to reach the singles final. He's seeded 28th, and he's ranked 32nd on the ATP Tour. But, Lauren, he's also the tallest major finalist ever at 6'8".
His serve is just murder.
Yeah.
He hit 140. He topped out at 140 against Query two nights before. And that was a game that ended, by the way, in New York at 2 a.m. Lauren went to sleep with the score 3-3 in the fourth set at 1 o'clock in the morning here. And he went on to win it very, very shortly after that. But his serve is just so dominant that you have to break his serve to beat him, and it's hard to do. He's very average otherwise.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens tomorrow. Let's take a time out. We'll bring in Kevin Hamley up next here on DWS.
Illinois volleyball continues today at 2:30 as they'll take on Colorado at Huff Hall. We'll have it for you. Dave Lone with a play-by-play today at 2:30 on DWS.
Kate Fornico will serve. By Hens. Setter dumps it over on two. Gray puts it down. Stanford wins the rally, gets the point, takes set three, 25-22, and wins the match. Three sets to none.
Yeah, valiant effort by the Illini there. They were in that every set and had some opportunities to maybe steal a set or two, but just the physicality and the experience of some of the Stanford Cardinals came to bear on the Illini as that one wrapped up.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us today. Pleased to be joined by now Stanford head volleyball coach Kevin Hamley. They got the victories you heard last night, three sets to none. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Oh, not a problem. Always good to talk to you. You guys are off to a pretty good start this season. Got a tough match later today, but I wanted to look back at last night and just kind of how that match unfolded. I know the Illini, you know, had the lead in the first two sets late, but you guys, you know, some experienced players in your team were able to just kind of, you know, stay calm and finish off those two sets, and of course, win the third.
Yeah, we did a good job of making plays when it mattered the most. You know, I thought both teams hit extremely well, and it was a very offensive match, and it was a match of runs, and they had ended up being on in a pretty good position at the end of, especially two of those sets, the first two sets, and I thought my team played very calm, especially with a very hostile crowd, and made some really nice plays when it mattered most.
Well, Kevin, do you have any feelings as you looked over there and saw the Illini, the crowd, and the students?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fun environment to be a part of. It certainly was an emotional match. There was a lot that went into it. You know, I feel like, I was kind of overwhelmed, I guess, a little bit at times just by the fact of what it was and the amount of people that I knew and then being on the other sideline and looking at the team over there and all these players, like every single one of them that I created a relationship with. And, you know, they definitely were fighting hard against us. It was just a unique situation with a unique set of emotions that I'm not sure I was prepared for. I don't know how you prepare for it, but it was interesting to go through it, and I'm glad I went through it. It was a great experience, and I enjoyed it.
Well, I got to ask you what you thought of some of the players that formerly played for you, Bastianelli in particular, Poulter, some of the others that you recruited, obviously, and where do you think Illinois stands right now going into this season?
Yeah, I think they're playing well. I think I like the way that they're running the tempo that they're running at, and Beth Prince has really come on. And I thought Jack Quaid looked great. Allie was just a beast. We had no answer for her. No one has so far this year. And Jordan's. You know, she's pretty special, and she's really coming into her own. And her and Allie are playing like juniors. You know, so I think their development is. They continue to develop, and they look great. I think they're in a tough league, but they're primed to make the tournament, no question. And how far they can go will probably depend on whether they can get one more person going offensively, whether that's Cooney or whether that's DeBerg or one of those guys. But it looks like they need just a little bit more offense to be able to beat the top notch teams in the Big Ten.
Well, now that you're in the Pac-12 and you look at it from a different perspective, how does the Pac-12 stack up from the Big Ten?
I think, you know, I don't know yet because I haven't played any Pac-12 matches, but sure seems good at the top, especially. I think the middle, I think that's what will be interesting to watch the most, because I think the middle of the Big Ten is just brutal, and anyone can beat anyone, and everyone tells me that, and I'm sure it's true. I just I haven't been through it yet to really know what the Pac-12 is like. I've watched a little bit of video here and there, but we've really been focusing weekend to weekend. So, you know, I watched Colorado, and they're supposed to be in the middle of our league, and I thought they were pretty good last night against Penn State. So we'll see. Ask me in a year, and I'll know a lot more.
Kevin, when you lost to Penn State earlier, How close was that match, number one, and how healthy were you? Did you have everybody?
We did not have everybody. Moretta Lutz, who's our 6'8 opposite, wasn't there. She was injured. And then we were pretty dinged up in some other positions. And they've, like Fitzmaurice, who was, I think she was third in our team in kills last night. She wasn't 100%, but she's closer to that now. And we were healthy. And Moretta was a big key for us last night. Obviously, she was second in kills and hit a really high percentage. Was very efficient. And it's a really difficult presence to deal with at 6'8 and as physical as she is. So we really missed her against Penn State. But we were close. We had chances. We were up in a very similar situation in Illinois to us in the first set, and ended up losing that set, and then lost the second, won the third, and then kind of the same thing. It was tight, it was back and forth, but they ended up pulling away in the fourth. But it felt like a battle. It felt like a match like last night where we seemed pretty close.
Kevin Hamley, former Illini volleyball coach, joining us. He's now the head coach of Stanford, of course. And Kevin, as you look at the match last night, we talked about the atmosphere and how electric it was. How does it help your team to fight through those tough moments in an electric atmosphere like that on the road, a raucous atmosphere, they've been defending champions. You guys are defending champions, but still to be on the road this early in the season and deal with something like that.
Well, we're really young, so it was good to get a young team in that atmosphere and see kind of how they managed it and how they felt. And they just really enjoyed it. I think they enjoyed every part of it. If someone was talking a little bit of trash to them, they enjoyed it. The crowd got excited. They enjoyed it. They loved the band, the guy with the tube on his head, all that stuff. I think it was they enjoyed what it was competitively, and they were able to really calm down and play steady when it mattered most. And that's why you play in those matches in that kind of environment, is to put them in those situations where you can kind of maybe call on that later on in the year. So I thought they did great.
What are the chances, Coach, putting you on the spot here of maybe scheduling and maybe a home and home with Illinois and Stanford on a regular basis, just kind of outside of the Big Ten Pac-12 challenge?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think maybe after all the players I recruited have left, that we could talk about that. But I think that was a lot for everybody. So I'm glad we got through it and it happened. But I'm not sure that I want to go through that again.
Kevin, who is your main competition in the Pac-12? Who do you
Washington?
See?
Washington's the team, I think. They're actually picked to win the Pac-12.
Really?
They won the Pac-12 last year. Yeah. So they have everybody back. So that's going to be the main competition. I think Utah, Oregon, those guys are playing really well. So, the legal unfold, and we'll see.
How is the living quarters in Stanford? I know that this is a little different than what you've known in the past. And how's that all working out? Explain that for us.
We're in a fortunate situation where they have some coaches' housing that we get to live in it on campus. And it's literally like a 4-minute bike ride from the office, and it's a pretty special situation. And there's really good schools around there for our kids. And so we were concerned when they told us we were going to take it, of course, because it's so expensive to live there. But when they say that there's on-campus housing, you're thinking dorm or apartment. But this is a beautiful home in a really nice neighborhood with a lot of kids around and stuff. It's a really good situation, surrounded by a bunch of other coaches with kids. So we're pretty fortunate.
But this is not something you actually invest in, is it? I mean, this is just for the time that you're there. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, the minute they're done with me, the minute I'm out of the house. So.
Is there anything like this in sports anywhere else?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a unique place. It's just the cost of living. So I don't think that there's anything else like that. I know there's some schools in throughout California in the UC system where you can actually buy the house, but not the land. So the house isn't worth very much. So it becomes more affordable, but the university still owns the land that the house is on. Dave Niffen, actually, my former assistant, in a situation like that at UC Irvine. But that's the closest thing. I've never heard of anything like this where they just put you in a home and you get to stay there.
Well, Coach, how did the family been adjusting into a new environment? Obviously, the Midwest, Central Illinois, is a lot different than out in the Stanford.
Well, they love it. They absolutely love it. They're, here there was no kids around where we live, so part of that's our fault for the place we decided to live. But there's kids running in and out of our house all the time. There's we have a playground right in front of our house, and they love the schools, and so they're just the kids are in heaven. Mary, you know, she was always against California, being a Southside Chicago girl. She thought of it as the OC, you know, or Laguna Hills or whatever it was, those terrible TV shows back in the day. And so now that she's been there living, and especially Northern California and the Bay Area, she really loves it. Like, I don't think there's any part of her that ever wants to leave California now. So that makes me happy because, you know, for me, it was home, and it was I was excited to get back, and I love California, and I, you know, it's got a different vibe, and it really suits me, and the fact that it suits my family really makes me really happy, and I'm glad that they're settling in, and it'll just get better as time goes on.
Kevin, we wish you the best, and you give us somebody to follow on the West Coast, which we will do. So good luck from here on out.
Thank you guys so much. Thanks for being on. Brings back some good nostalgic moments, so I appreciate hearing you guys' voice.
Not a problem, Coach. Thanks so much. Good luck tonight.
Thanks.
Yep. That is Stanford volleyball coach Kevin Hamley joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS after the win over the Illini last night, 3-0. But it was a tight match again, 25-23, 25-23, and 25-22.
It was not discouraging.
No.
I mean, it was a loss, but when you're playing against a team that's the defending national champion and you play them that close and actually had a chance to win twice,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
two of the three matches, and it's too bad that they couldn't pull one of them off at least because they were really close. And you know, some of those plays at the end, you know, the blocks and things, they could go either way, and they swung Stanford's way late in all three matches. All three sets.
Yeah, and the third set, the Illini were down 23-22, so that they had a chance to maybe tie that one up or even take the lead if they could have got a couple of points there. So the Illini gave the defending champion all they could handle last night, but the Stanford comes out with the victory. Again, Illinois volleyball at 2:30 today against Colorado. Dave Lone on the call at 2:20. We'll switch gears to Illini football, Big Ten football. Jay Layman coming up next, the former Illini linebackers in studio here on DWS.
Pretty good, huh?
I still get tingles, man. It's been a decade, I think, when you come as far as we did, you know, from 2005 to 2007, it was quite a journey.
Now, we had a linebacker in the 1960s who used to play center on offense. In that last eight-minute drive, where were you?
I was on the bench telling him to go for it on that fourth down. Yeah. I thought that was ridiculous that we weren't going to go for it at first,
If Tressel hadn't called timeout, you were going to punt.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we got saved on that one. Tressel called timeout, and Juice came over to Zook and said, I'll get a yard. And, you know, it's almost impossible to stop a QB sneak, and Juice was about 225 pounds at that point. And almost the benefit of the doubt, the officials almost give it to you. Yeah, so it was interesting, unless you have a bad snap. But stuff could happen, so we got it. And obviously, Juice came through on some big third down conversions.
And, you know, I remember watching that drive and just amazement that it kept going and the clock kept ticking down. Jay Layman, former Illini, played in that game. The actual anniversary is this year, November 19th. Illinois plays in November 18th, so almost to the day this year. Just an exciting time here. I said you still get chills. Just hearing that game, and I enjoy hearing it. Just hearing the call. And have you heard Brian's call? Is Brian Barnhart on the call there?
I had not heard it until Scott ran it last week at Sports Talk on Friday, and I still get excited about it. I never heard Brian, you know, do it because sometimes you just watch the game copy afterwards, you know. So, but it's always good to hear Brian.
Well, let's get to 2017. Yes. We'll move 10 years ahead here. To week two for the Illini football team. Ball State, you were here last week for that game. The Illini got the 24-21 win over Ball State thanks to a late touchdown. What concerned you? What did you see good from the Illini in that game, and what concerned you from that game?
Well, let's start with the positive. I think they've got some bona fide playmakers in Mikey Dudek, Malik Turner, and Mike Epstein. I thought that Lauren in his article today made a great point. Dudek's got to get 10 touches. How do you get them the ball? I don't care if it's reverses, punt returns. I don't care if it's bubble screens or bootlegs or whatever. So I think that has to be there. I actually thought that our linebackers played decent. Delshawn had good production. He could have made some more plays. I think Trey Watson is a bona fide Big Ten linebacker for sure. I was really impressed by our young defensive line. I think there's huge potential. I don't think they're the best defensive line in the conference, but two or three years, watch out. I'm really high on Gay and also Bobby Rountree. Now, offensive line, I don't mean to be negative. It was just bad ball. I mean, guys playing high, leaning, feet not moving. Some of that, they're young, first time playing. Some of that, different position. positions. They just look totally out of sync. And
now, they're in different positions this week than they were in that one. They obviously see a problem.
Right. And you know, I think from what I've heard from the coaching staff is they feel like this is their best lineup for the offensive line, obviously.
With Boyd at tackle.
With Boyd at tackle, and that's where he's going to stay. That's where he's projected to be at. Mm-hmm. And so why not put him there right now, develop him, and hopefully that he can pick up the speed before they get into Big Ten conference play.
How do you like the idea of switching tackles and guards back and forth on side, left to right?
Yeah, no, I talked about that with Garrett McGee, and the concept of it I understand. The concept is this, and I'm going to get a little football-y, so stick with me here. There is what you call a 3 technique and a 6 technique on one side of the defense to the tight end's formation, okay? So whoever the tight end side, that means that the 6 technique is outside of the tackle. There's nobody head up on that tackle at all, okay? So that means...
On the tight end side.
On the tight end side, because he's over the tight end. The defensive end's over the tight end, not over the tackle. So that would be your, you know, your quick tackle because, man, there's nobody head up on you. You know what I'm saying by that? There's nobody head up on you straight up. Now, what's interesting is that your strong guard has that... You know, that 3 technique, which is head up on him, basically shaded on him, where he's got to be strong. That's where they had Allegretti because he's one of the strongest guys. You got a guy head up on you. Mm-hmm. So it's built to have the younger guys not have any guys head up in their face so they can have help. Okay. That's what I was talking to Garrett McGee. I know that's kind of confusing when I talk it like that's easier if you can draw a picture of it. But I would say this. For me personally, knowing defense, knowing offense, I think repetition of being on the same side for me as a young guy would be easier. That being said, I haven't been coached up by, in the other technique as well. But I just know that when you're young, doing the same thing on the same side seems to be easier. But
does anybody in the NFL flip-flop their linemen offensively?
Not that I know of.
Left tackles get paid $13 million a month.
Right. Right.
I mean, there's a reason why they play the left tackle more than the right tackle.
Right, because they're protecting the blind side, the best defensive end. So it's a Bobby Petrino thing. And Bobby Petrino, I mean, you can't argue with the fruit that he said. I just don't see it as a widespread practice. And I'm interested to see how much flipping and whatnot they do today. I think they're going to continue to do that because that's the philosophy of Garrett McGee, and he's had success at other places. For me, as a young player, if I was an offensive lineman, I think that would be confusing, but I haven't been in camp with Coach.
Well, here's my problem. You got Boyd starting at tackle. He's a raw rookie, and you got him on the left side one side time, and you got him on the right side the next time. And I think he's got to rethink each time he moves. Now, wait a minute. I'm on the right side this time. He doesn't know it till he's coming out of the huddle. I mean, he hears it in the huddle, and now he's got to think about what he's going to do. I just don't like it.
Yeah, no, I understand that it's different patterning. It's more probably for them to learn. I guess I haven't been through a whole camp where they've practiced that, and maybe they're used to it. But yeah. I would think for a young guy, it might add a little bit more. Each play, I got to say, okay, what side am I on now? Right. So, but maybe the way they have their plays called up, it's easier. I'm not sure.
Jay Lehman, former Illini linebacker, joining us on Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's on the call with Dave Refson for the Big Ten Network tonight as the Illini take on Western Kentucky. Let's got to mention Mike Epstein and a great first game for him. 2 touchdowns and played really well, caught some passes, and you know he's going to start today over Kendrick Foster.
Yeah, and he deserves to, honestly. What I love about Lovie Smith, he said there's no lifetime jobs around here, right? which is great. I mean, yeah. We know Lauren has a lifetime job by the radio and on the paper. Yeah. I mean, I would say this, he deserves it. You know, Mike Epstein reminds me of a lot of guys I play with in Pierre Thomas. Here's why. Pierre Thomas was not great at any one thing, but he was really good at a lot of things. He was good at special teams. Great return man. Mm-hmm. Great receiver, blocking out of the backfield. Also, good power when he ran the ball. And smart. You could rely on him. And Mike Epstein's a guy that, you know, they got to get the ball to Mike and Mike down the stretch. Or Malik, the 3 M's I call him. You know, and Mike Epstein's a guy you can count on. Acts like an upperclassman for sure.
Well, and we touched on Dudek already, getting him more touches, and I hope that happens today. Chase Crouch, what did you see from him last week in terms of his performance? You know, he's It's the first time he's starting, where he's the full-time starter. He played a game and a half last year, so still got some experience to gain.
Here's the thing. I was an emotional player. If you're an emotional player, you feed off success.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever got the ball rolling, number one. Number two, he was running for his life a little bit,
yes,
right?
Yes, we talked about that.
But I think also he has more time than he thinks he does.
Okay.
His eyes, if you watch closely, are down at the rush. Yeah. And our eyes would be down at the rush, too.
Oh, I'd be going down.
If I had guys coming at me, right? But
I'd be
tucking
and running.
He needs to keep his eyes down the
field.
I'd be
looking over my shoulder.
Right? Well, he'd be running the other way.
But, I would run the other way.
But let's give the defensive line credit. They offensive line credit. They protected good enough to have Malik Turner on a deep post route open two times in which Crouch threw the ball behind him. He even threw it behind on Dudek. He was thrown behind everybody, okay? He's got to be more accurate, number one. And number two, just be more poised. He's got more time in the pocket.
It's a very small sample size in the last week and in the game and a half last season, so I guess 2.5 games now. Do you think he can be an accurate enough passer to be successful with the wide receiver? He's got lots of wide receivers, Ricky Small, we mentioned the other ones. Do you think he can be successful as a passer in the Big Ten?
I don't know. I haven't watched him in practice. To be honest, the accuracy I've seen thus far would probably put him in the lower tier of quarterback accuracy in the Big Ten. But he's only really played 2.5 games, maybe.
Yeah, yep.
So and he wasn't kind of healthy in that Rutgers game, right? So I don't want to judge him yet, but he needs to be better. I think it has to get poised and get it on the edge. I want to throw better on the run. Get him on a sprint out boot. I think they're going
to
do that.
He's got to get used to it. I think that what I saw in practice is the 2 weeks that we watched, that we were able to watch every day, in the 7-on-7s he hits. Then they put four linemen in there, and all of a sudden, 11-on-11, it's different.
That's interesting that you said that, Lauren, and you didn't even know.
I mean, we talked about that all the time, about, my goodness, he looks really sharp, and then they put go 11-on-11, and what happened?
Well, I think Garrett McGee, the offensive coordinator, saw that same thing, and he said even in individual drills where the quarterback's just kind of throwing back and forth to people, he put scout team D-line in front of him this week the whole time so that he had people in front of him because he was noticing that same thing, that he was accurate when he was just pitching and catching with his receiver in 7-7. But when the lineman got in there, he didn't really have a sense of the pocket presence that you want. Yeah, and that comes with experience.
They bother him, I think. And the other part is, you mentioned, they sometimes got through.
Right,
And it got in his face. And I noticed he got a number of passes blocked in practice.
Yeah, no, I think he doesn't necessarily. Here's what I would say, too. When you have feet, you rely on your feet. You know, if you're Wes Lunt, you're not escaping from anybody, right? So you might as well just keep your eyes down the field or get down, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what it is. With him, he's always kind of like, I got my feet to rely on. He's got to know when to use his feet and when not to use feet. Now, I will say, he's stronger in the pocket than Wes. You know, one thing I really bothered me about Wes was that he fell down pretty easily a lot of times. You know, he didn't have a strength in the pocket like Crouch does.
Well, we'll come back and talk about Western Kentucky and get a breakdown of that game today. But before we do, I wanted to – Trey Watson had 16 tackles last week, the fumble recovery. We were all very entertained by the handoff to Kenyon Jackson. Was hoping that was a touchdown. But
Phillips had 16 touchdowns.
Phillips had 16.
Phillips had 16, Trey had 12. Yeah, flipped, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But had bigger plays.
Yeah. And so just a great game from Trey Watson.
What do you think,
which
as a linebacker yourself, what do you think of those two?
I think Delshawn's a guy that reminds me a lot. He's a little bit bigger than Antonio Steele. But at that weak side position, it was great. When we had Antonio Steele playing with me, he could cover the stuff. I could take care of the run. And then Britt Miller was strong enough, he could take on a lot of stuff, and he could also run. I think Delshawn cleans up a lot of stuff in the pass game, but I think Trey Watson is a bona fide all Big Ten line. I really do. He's an aggressive guy. I think the scheme that Western Kentucky plays, especially in the run game, allows for tackles for losses. I wouldn't be surprised to see Trey Watson have 3 or 4 tackles for loss this game. He's an aggressive guy. I think Hardy's coached him up well, and he seems to be a playmaker. He plays with emotion. He's a leader. So I think he'd get a lot more pub if he was on a different team other than Illinois.
We'll take a time. I'll come back more. Former Illini Jay Layman joining us in the studio. We'll break down Western Kentucky. Kicks off at 7 o'clock tonight. Our coverage gets underway at 5:30. All that's coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS, 65 degrees at 9:51, having a good time on and off the air today. Well, as promised, we're going to break down Western Kentucky. Mike White, not former Illini coach Mike White, the quarterback for Western Kentucky, threw for 4,300 yards last season, just had 37 touchdowns, only 7 interceptions, just a great quarterback, a 67% completion percentage. Jay, I'm kind of scaring myself reading these stats. This is a very talented quarterback. He lost some receivers from last year's team, but he's really good.
Well, he is talented. He did lose some receivers. He lost Coach Brohm. I think Jeff Brohm is a phenomenal play caller.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at what he did last night against Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a MAC team, but you know they were in the MAC championship last year, and that's a team that Purdue traditionally would struggle with. They took him to town. So I think Brahm's a great play caller. This to me did not look like the same offense. To be honest, okay. I was not scared looking at this offense.
Okay. They scored 31 points last week.
They scored 31 points on an FCS opponent, but yeah, I would just say this. When I look at up front, their offensive line, they lost 3 great offensive linemen, the second-round pick as well. I would be really surprised if Illinois doesn't. I think the game's going to be close. I think Illinois should win. I look at this tape. I really do. I'm not a homer. I'm just saying, looking at what I saw, I feel like Illinois should win. Now, the big ifs are offensive line and everything else, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Well, I mean, you break down games probably better than anybody else. I mean, you really dive deep into this, so you're definitely not a homer into this thing. The night game success hasn't been there the last 3 night games. Illinois really struggled, but you feel like that streak's going to be broken tonight.
I mean, night game, schmite game, right? I mean, it's like when's the game played? Who really cares, yeah, right? I mean, we love to make it up. We have to talk about stuff on shows, so we have a 3-game losing streak.
We got
to
bring all the stats out.
Rutgers has a 10-game losing streak that's going to be broken today against Eastern Michigan. I mean, all kinds of streaks, right?
Yeah.
But when you look it up front, I'm telling you, the defensive line for Illinois is going to have a day, I really believe. I really believe.
A team like Western Kentucky can have a great group of players. They had 2 receivers that, caught 170 passes between them last year. You just don't have those every year, not at Western Kentucky. And you mentioned the 3 key offensive linemen. They have to put new people in there. And I'm with you. I think Illinois can slow them down. I'm not as worried about White as I'm just happy that they don't have that running back that scored 27 touchdowns and those 2 receivers.
Yeah, I mean, people don't realize that they led the nation in rushing touchdowns or something last year. Or they had a running back that led the nation in rushing touchdowns. I mean, so they lost him, lost a lot of weapons. This is – and what they did, they spread people out to run the ball last year. And now they have more of a traditional set, meaning a under-center set where they're trying to run the football. And it looks to me, when the quarterback goes under center – they look a little bit out of sync and awkward. They're trying to run power, trying to run lead. And guys, the team was not built for that. It was built for a spread attack. So I really like Illinois' chances in this game. It's going to be close because Western Kentucky's got some swagger. They're accustomed to winning. And you said that's their edge. But, I think Illinois' got players.
I mean, when you're used to winning, that's right. That's a positive. War chant.
Oh, yeah.
What does Jay Layman think about doing away with the war chant?
Well, here's what I have to say. You know, one, I really do love the I did love the music when I played. I mean, it was a third down thing.
You could hear it.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
I could hear it, and you know, I remember actually leading people in the clap on third down. Because I like to get people involved, right? I don't like it at all, Jay. I don't.
Never.
I don't like to do stuff.
You're very quiet and reserved.
Like to do stuff alone. And here's what I would say is, I understand people are hurt and you know about the war chant going away. And people were hurt my junior year when they took the chief away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that was February 2007, I believe. But I honestly think a lot of these issues, they go away if you start winning.
Yeah,
I really do.
Oh, I really
because here's the thing: we sold out of all our tickets at the Rose Bowl that year. There was people asking for tickets, and that was the same year that took away the chief, right?
Yeah, there was no chief dance at halftime of the Rose Bowl season. Zero.
So I think here's the deal: why isn't it a big deal in Florida State, or why isn't it a big deal every other places? I mean, there's some more success there, and I think people, if they're not successful, they're gonna start picking on stuff.
Well, yeah, because the war chant, if the university officials like, it doesn't really work as well as it used to. And, you know, the other argument is, well, they're not winning, as you just mentioned, success. You know, there's not success on the field. Fans aren't into the game. If it's third down and you're down 10 in the third quarter, but it's third down, fans aren't paying attention.
I think that is a total bogus argument.
Okay.
That it's not working as good. It's not working as good because you're not getting more people on third down.
because that's when it was played, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, if you don't have fans there doing it or students there doing it, of course it's not going to work good. Everything works better when you're winning.
Yeah.
That's a bogus argument. This decision was made for people that were offended by it, and they wanted to make sure those people felt welcome, and that's the decision that they made. Josh Whitten made, and obviously the chancellor made, and they've said, okay, we want to be welcoming to everyone. I feel like I don't lose any sleep over losing the war chant. I really don't. It doesn't matter to me that much. But did I enjoy it when I played? Yes.
Well, the trustees talked about it in closed session the other day, and they came out that they didn't have a consensus, and they did say, Tim Kors, the chair, said they should have talked to the board before they made this decision. That seems like a concern that they didn't go to the board for such a large scale decision.
Well,
they didn't know it was that big. Yeah. They didn't know it was going to hit like this.
Oh, yeah, they did. I mean, you had to have known it was going to be. People were going to be that upset.
I didn't think it would be I thought it'd be a several days and go away.
Yeah, it's not going away.
I'm way off on that. I told Kent Brown, I said, it's not going to last that long. You just kind of duck and hold your ground and it'll be gone. It's still going on.
Well, the virality of things these days with social media and everything, the shares of articles and just somebody comments on it and shared again and some influencer gets it and shares it. And brings it up and just goes back to the chief.
All those people are upset when the chief this revived it.
Right. It's almost like these issues, you try to move on from them and then something revives it and it just brings back all kinds of feelings and combativeness on both sides. So I don't lose any sleep over the issue, but do I think it was a cool part of my Illinois football experience? Absolutely, for sure. I remember that on third down. And a lot of programs have a third down, song. You hear the bells in that clip we had from Ohio State and other things, and that was kind of our third down song.
Well, the 3-1, which you didn't get to hear as a player because you were in the locker room.
Yeah.
The university, Chancellor Jones, Josh, Barry Hauser, the director of the marching line, are all very emphatic that is not going anywhere. Do you think that'll be the case,
I think when you look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think that was created before even the chief was created,
Yes, that's true.
And so I think the spirit of that was never to be, I think the chief was created to fit into that rather than that to fit into the chief. And so I'm glad they're taking a stand on that. I personally love the 3-1 song. I love all the songs. I really do. So I think when you have traditions, it's a song that you grow up with and you miss it. For sure.
Well, Jay, before we let you go, I'm going to make you pick the game tonight and give me a score. Give me a score. You already think Illinois can win, but I want a score.
I think they're going to be better offensively. That is Illinois. I think Chase Crouch is going to be better. But you're going to need to score. I think you're going to need to score 31 points. I really do. I think I'm going to say 31-27 Illinois.
What are you doing between now and the game? Not until 7 o'clock tonight. You've got 9 hours. What games are you watching this afternoon?
Well, I think Wisconsin's up on early and whatnot. I'll try to watch the 11 o'clock games. I got to study my stuff and memorize these names for the Hilltoppers. Well, Illinois is not too hard to remember. I got to read all of Lauren's articles because he gives me the inside.
We better let you go. There's a lot to read.
I gotta work out. I go get a salad at Harvest Market. They didn't have all these fancy grocery stores when I was growing up. We had IGAs and stuff, but I'll get a salad, get my pregame stuff on.
How many Illini games are you going to work this year? Do you know?
Lauren, I only have the first three games of the year scheduled, which was obviously this is the Western Kentucky. And then
where are you next week?
We're at Minnesota, Middle Tennessee next week. So I get to see PJ Fleck in action. And then from there, anything can happen.
I wonder how Minnesota is going to do against Oregon State today.
Well, Oregon State,
that's a big game for Minnesota.
Really struggled against, Colorado State in that week zero game? I mean, they got hammered. I'm surprised that Gary Anderson, who I think is a pretty decent coach at Utah State and Wisconsin, hasn't had more success there. But I wouldn't be surprised if P.J. Fleck went in there and got the win.
Outside of Alabama being the obvious best team in the country, Florida State lost their quarterback last week, but Alabama is just really good. Who do you think is your number two right now? Not the end of the season because there's a ton of games we play, but right now, who do you think is your number two? Not in the rankings, just who you think is your number two best team in the country?
Oklahoma State.
Okay.
Really? Yeah. I mean, you look at what they have. They've probably got a great sophomore running back. Mason Rudolph's probably a Heisman Trophy. James Washington's the best receiver probably in the country. And they've got probably five or six receivers that are really good. And Mike Gundy scores a lot of points. And you look at the Big 12, I think Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley, even though Baker Mayfield is good and they got a great offensive line, I think they're going to beat them. And after you beat them, there's nobody left. There's no way. Baylor lost to Liberty. TCU's not what they used to be. And Texas is not what they used to be. So they're going to make the playoff, and they got offense that can beat anybody. So Oklahoma State's my dark horse to win the national title. I mean, honestly, I really think they have that kind of horsepower.
And this is why preseason rankings don't matter, because Oklahoma State is 11th in the country, right?
Right. I mean, you watch him, though. You heard it here first on Sports Talk, September 9th, 2017. I tell you, Oklahoma State, you look at their schedule, and the Big 12, man, they got one game. One game. If they win that, they're in it, and they can beat anybody with their offense. So I just think they're going to be there.
This show has been recorded, just so you know.
Book it. Lauren's going to be talking about it in a week. He'll claim it as his own, but it's okay.
I pretend it was my idea.
He's going to. We'll get to week.
I think so.
About week 9 or 10, he'll say, oh, see, I told you so. I'm like, well, that's how that went down. Jay Levin, we'll see you tonight over the stadium. Thanks so much. Great stuff as always.
Appreciate it, guys.
All right. More Saturday Sports Talk coming up next here on DWS.
The impact of Manny Jackson's arrival on the campus of the University of Illinois in 1956 was immediate. The color barrier to the men's basketball program had been shattered. Jackson would not stop there. He'd also become the first African-American captain in the school's history.
There's no doubt about the fact that him breaking that barrier was very, very significant, not only to Manny, but to the university.
2 years after graduation, Manny once again pursued his love of the game in a stint with the Harlem Globetrotters. But Jackson told Trotters owner Abe Saperstein that he'd only join if he was taught the business side of the operation too. That decision would prove to be prescient. When Jackson purchased the Globetrotters in 1993, he became the first African-American majority owner of a major professional sports team.
For Manny to own a major sports franchise, that really has opened the door for people to follow in his footsteps. So Manny was a pioneer.
Not only did Manny Jackson restore luster to the Globetrotters' name, but he also reinvigorated their worldwide fan base with his focus on philanthropy and a commitment to community service.
He took a brand that had been suffering and a lot of people thought maybe it was on its last legs, and totally rejuvenated it.
In 2007, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame established the Manny Jackson Human Spirit Award to recognize those, like Manny, who had used the game as a platform for positive change.
I want to thank Manny Jackson, who has been a role model for a lot of us behind him in his shadows for his business acumen and his philanthropic work around the globe.
Manny is a guy who gives back, and he wanted to acknowledge people who were also making a big impact on the world through basketball, and what better name to have it associated with than Manny.
The last thing I want to say is Jerry Colangelo. I can't say enough about Jerry, and all of you know him. He's an icon as a leader in basketball, an icon as a leader in sport, an icon and a leader in life. I've known Jerry since I was 16, 17 years old. And I say this, and Jerry gets concerned when I say this all the time. I'm pretty good at politics. I know a way around the world. If I had to pick one person that I'd volunteer to say, run this country, or run any country, any problem, Jerry, my friend, I love you to death. You'd be at the top of my list. You are tremendous as a leader and a role model. In 2012, I wrote a book called Boxcar to Boardroom. I had no idea that I'd be standing here one day. In fact, when I wrote the book Boxcar, I did it for my daughter. My daughters, I don't have to know what happened in my life. And the boardrooms had me thinking, how can a person come from a railroad boxcar with 13 other people end up overseeing billion-dollar corporations? And I began to appreciate only in America. This is a great country. I wanted my kids to know this and know that process. I had the blessing of playing at the University of Illinois, one of the greatest schools in the world, the University of Illinois. I had the good fortune to play for two of the greatest basketball teams in the world, the Harlem Globetrotters, and I played briefly for a makeup team, the New York Duct Tapers. And I thought, for these blessings, I've got to make the best of it.
While playing with the Harlem Globetrotters, I traveled to 105 countries. Imagine this, from the railroad boxcar, I'm walking the streets of London with Prince Charles. We're giving conferences to bankers. Come from that boxcar with 13 people, I find myself in South Africa, spending time with Nelson Mandela and quoting him in speeches as I traveled around. I go with Hazel O'Leary to China, and we're in Beijing talking about district heating, how to conserve energy. And I go on and on and say, how does a young person of color from a boxcar who thinks of himself as a ball player end up influencing our society? And it tells me we all are part of a very powerful game, and my life has been very storybook through all of this. And my dad read that I was on six Fortune 500 boards of directors. He said, you know, you're like the Black Forrest Gump. And I said, thanks a lot, Dad. But he went on to say, he said, you know, people from every walk of life have helped my son accomplish a lot. And I wanted to know what he's thinking as he listens to me stand up here and stumble through this damn speech tonight. But I feel good about it. I feel good about my dad. I feel good about the life I've lived. I feel good about the contributions that have been made. And I feel good the fact that I've been associated with this great game of basketball.
Manny Jackson at the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame last night. About a 16-17 minute speech he gave last night. Obviously, that's just about three or so minutes of that speech. Just a really good speech from Manny last night. Recognized a lot of people mentioned the University of Illinois. But if you didn't know Manny Jackson's backstory, you heard a little bit of it there. And it's just a good story here. And he's a great ambassador for a lot of different people in a lot of different walks of life.
Yeah, he really is. And he, when he came from Edwardsville, he wasn't the first African American to step on the court, but he was the first one to start. Mm-hmm. And he and Governor Vaughn together. And the interesting thing about this is that you people back there would remember that Governor was a little better player. Governor had to play center, unfortunately, because of the injury to Chiazza, and all of a sudden Illinois was left without a center, and he had to line up against a lot of postmen in the Big Ten. Did Governor. But he was a natural forward, but he was a strong rebounder and a tough player. And of course, Manny had that perfect jump shot. He had he was a jump shooter and a guard. And you've seen what's happened since.
And he's been back on campus many times. What has your experience been like with him over the years? Do you have much of a relationship with him, and how much you've been able to be around him? I know he doesn't live here, so he's up in Chicago, I believe. But what's your relationship been like with him over the years?
Well, he's just really easy to get along with. Yeah. I mean, he's a real strong Illini, as you know, and the Hall of Fame in the State Farm Center is his project. I mean, I'm sure put up the money behind it. I don't know how much he put up, but it's the Manny Jackson Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and if you haven't got a chance to see the Hall of Fame at State Farm Center, you know, it's really nice, interactive videos, uniforms, old seats. It's a great addition to State Farm Center outside of the renovations of the suites and the changing of how everything looks in there and different video boards and such. The Hall of Fame is a really gem, I think, over at State Farm Center. Well, I wanted to mention also the Hall of Fame had several people and also inducted last night. Former Bulls general manager Jerry Krause. Class also included Rebecca Lobo and Tracy McGrady, but also included former Illini coach Bill Self. Here's Bill last night speaking about his journey, which of course included a stop here in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois.
I got my first head job at Oral Roberts. We lost 18 games in a row during our first two seasons. On the baseline in the Mabee Center where we played, the following words were painted on the court: expect a miracle. We were so bad, it should have read, it's gonna take a miracle. But those same players basically flipped it, and we won 31 of our last 38. From there, we went across town to Tulsa and had three great years. My second year was my first NCAA tournament appearance. And in the second round, our opponent was number one seed Duke. And if we were just 42 points better that night, we would have won that game. But we did learn what it takes to play against the big boys and develop the blueprint on how to compete at that level. We had an opportunity to go to the University of Illinois in Champaign right after that. After three successful seasons and coaching some absolute studs, the table was set for them to be great, and they were. We would not have left Illinois unless Kansas called. Kansas, a place where the game's inventor, Dr. James Naismith, was your first coach, followed by Dr. Fogg Allen, the father of basketball coaching. A university where Adolph Rupp, Ralph Miller, John McClendon, Dean Smith, Clyde Lavella, JoJo White, Lynette Woodard, and the incomparable Wilt Chamberlain all attended. I am incredibly proud to be the fifth head coach in KU history to join the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. James Naismith, Fogg Allen, Larry Brown, Roy Williams, and me. What is wrong with that picture right there? It always hasn't been perfect in Lawrence. We've had some tough, tough losses, but we've pretty much been a model of consistency, winning the Big 12 13 years in a row and a national championship when Mario made a huge shot in 2008.
Illini coach Bill Self joining Naismith Hall Memorial Hall of Fame ceremony last night. The audio from Manny Jackson and from Bill, courtesy the Hall of Fame. And Lauren, every time I think about Bill, I know Illini fans were devastated when he left. But as I've been around here longer, the Andre Iguodala story, I remember as just a fan back then when he was in high school, which he was playing about an hour from my hometown, and I was aware of him as a recruit. And I'm like, well, Illinois has to get this kid. I never saw him play because I didn't drive to Springfield to watch him play. And I know you did. I was just barely out of high school. And I'm like, Illinois needs to get him. And why is he? And then he was going to Arizona. I was like, why is he going to Arizona? Like, what? How does that happen? Like, how does? And you saw him play. And if you will, again, tell everybody.
Oh, I don't want to tell that story again. Okay. But I just happened to catch him on a good night. And Bill caught him on a bad night. The reason we originally went over there was because it wasn't necessarily to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill caught him on a bad night, and a few nights later I went over and saw him, and I was really impressed. And as I got on the bus, as you know, we were going to a game, and Bill was sitting in the front seat, and he said, what'd you see in Springfield last night? And I said, I saw a future pro. And then what happened next was he says, get your in the back of the bus and shut up. And I did.
Referencing that you thought Andre Iguodala was a pro.
He thought I was exaggerating.
I know Bill, you know, he knows you're right now. If you ever get a chance to ask him.
Oh, no.
Ask him if he remembers that story.
Oh,
I mean,
he wouldn't remember.
Probably not. Because Andre Iguodala, as everybody knows, has had a very long, lucrative NBA career. Has won two of the last three championships with the Warriors. And is just a really key player for Golden State.
I got to tell you a story.
Okay.
Because it's about what people remember. Once upon in my life, in a baseball game up north, I hit two home runs, one with the bases loaded and one with two men on,
okay.
And we won the game 7-5. The last home run was hit about 8 o'clock at night when it was just starting to get dark, and the umpire said, this is the last batter. Hit both home runs over Ray Vitecka's head. Ray Vitecka was a starting center for the New York Giants.
Oh.
Star player, star football player for 10 years in the NFL. I don't know how many years. Long time.
Mm-hmm.
So all these years later, and this is my greatest moment of my life.
Yeah.
Two home runs in one game. I mean, unbelievable. I was playing for Schererville. He was playing for East Chicago. It was when I was working in Hammond. And he comes to Illinois 15 years later as a scout.
Okay.
And I said, Ray, remember? He said, remember what? I didn't remember. He had to chase both those. He's a center fielder. He had to chase both those balls, and, you know, it was my high moment, and he didn't remember.
It wasn't too memorable for him, for a former NFL player.
So, no, Bill wouldn't remember that.
Yeah, probably not. Bill's done a few things since that time. I threw a couple texts. We'll take a timeout. Again, coming up at 10:30, Dave Revson. He's also on the call tonight at the Big Ten Network. Get his thoughts on the game and get his thoughts on the rest of the Big Ten and some key games around the country today. Bill from San Jose text in on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Lauren, I can't believe you thought the disgust over the war chant ban would go away quickly. It should never go away. And I mean, it's. I thought it would. I didn't think it would last 2 weeks, but I think I knew it would go on and on for a while. And it's. And it, I don't see an end in sight, really.
It's just getting warmed up, isn't it?
Oh, I think so.
I didn't have any idea when they said war chant. My problem was, I didn't know what they're referring to.
Well, it's.
I didn't even know.
I don't think a lot of.
I didn't know what the name of it was.
I don't think a lot of fans knew the name of it. They just knew the cheer.
Yeah.
And more so than the name. A lot of fans knew the name, but some didn't. Yeah. And that's but the name is really not what people were upset about. They were just mad that it's gone. Benny, a couple texts this morning. Although the Illini won last Saturday, I was not happy with our performance. I don't believe in going for 2 points when you scored the first 6 points. That can come back to haunt you. I don't think we will beat Western Kentucky and South Florida. Well, we'll see tonight what they're doing against Western
South
Kentucky.
South Florida.
That's, I wanted to bring that up. Go ahead.
I want to bring it up to you. You know more about weather than I do.
I'm not a meteorologist. I just play one on TV.
I mean, what will be the leftover situation by that time?
Well, I can tell you that several schools have canceled games today, including UCF against Connecticut. South Florida is not playing today because of Hurricane Irma. Florida, Florida State, Miami, UCF all canceled their games. There are some schools who are down in that part of the country. Hurricane Irma is supposed to make landfall today sometime, I believe. I've not read it, the latest models.
Could Illinois host the game here?
Oh, that's something way above my... You know,
and if Illinois doesn't play at South Florida, they'd have 2 weeks off in a row.
That would be correct. I don't know what South Florida's bye week is.
Yeah, we got a bye week the following week.
We do. I don't know if South Florida has one coming up. They probably don't. Most likely, we could look up here any time. But if they're unable to play, you know, South Florida may not be in a condition. I mean, if Irma hits tonight and tomorrow, Miami's supposed to get hit pretty hard. You know, my dad and his wife live by Tampa. They're about 30, 40 minutes away, and they're staying in their house. They're not leaving. But if it gets bad, they're going to head north. So we'll see. And, of course, the game is in Tampa next Friday. So we'll see. I mean, things may be cleared up by then, but when South Florida going to practice? Are they practicing right now? I guess not. I know that Miami, Mark Richt, sent the players home. Go get your families and go take care of that situation. We're not going to be here. I don't care about the game. I mean, and if people have seen Miami, one of Miami's assistant coaches has been very vocal on Twitter. He's been very upset because fans have been fans, and they're mad they're not playing a game, and fans are being ridiculous. And he put some very choice words on it. It was a big, long thing. He's upset. And he's like, this is a game. Coaches should not leave their families at home and go fly to a game somewhere while the family's back at home dealing with a hurricane. And so it's very interesting comments.
Well, Miami's going to get hit a lot harder than Tampa.
That's correct. I'm not a meteorologist. I don't pretend to be one. Of course, we're all keeping abreast of the situation, and we wish everybody safe down there. My sister is in St. Kitts, which is southeast of the Virgin Islands, and they were supposed to get a direct hit from Irma when it was Category 5. She's a veterinarian student down there, and they did not get a direct hit. They lost power for several days. I didn't hear from her until yesterday morning. I didn't hear from her like 3 days, 2 or 3 days, because they had no power, and it's all they need power to be able to contact people. The school, Ross University, I believe is the name of the school, they had power because they have a generator. So there's another hurricane coming right now, Hurricane Jose, and it's just been interesting with Hurricane Harvey last week, and so it's messing up all kinds of games.
Yeah, it's kind of taken a lot of the attention away from Houston.
Yeah, it is.
Which is still in terrible shape.
Oh, it absolutely is. And what J.J. Watt from the Texans did, he wanted to raise $200,000. Did you hear what the final number was?
I know it's up over 19.
It's $29 million.
29?
I believe it's 29. And
whoa.
$28, $29 million. And he's also helped distribute supplies. And it's a very difficult situation. The major earthquakes are happening And so we just wish everybody to be safe. And we'll see. I don't think they're going to cancel the South Florida game next week. I don't have any information. I've talked to nobody. I only say that because there's several days away from when the hurricane hits, but it depends on when it hits and when it leaves.
And what does it leave?
And what exactly? What does it leave in that area? We'll find out. We'll take a time out. Coming up at 10:30, Dave Refs from the Big Ten Network. Got time for your calls and texts and some other things. Maybe some more Kevin Anderson talk as well. Again, playing for the U.S. Open Championship tomorrow. The first Illini to reach a Grand Slam final. All that's coming up next here on DW. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for listening today. A full show today till 11 o'clock. Illini football kicks off at 7. Pre-game show with Scott Beatty, Fighting Illini game day at 5:30. We'll get you all the way up to the kickoff against Western Kentucky. But before that, Illinois volleyball takes on Colorado at 2:30. Dave Lone on the call there. Pre-game show at 2:20. Touched on Kevin Anderson as we were heading into the break, and Lauren and I were talking during the break of trying to think, we're an Illini. If he wins tomorrow, and that's a big if. He's playing Rafael Nadal, and that's
would
one
that
of the best
be bigger
tennis players
than
of all
a,
time.
Than an Illini winning a track championship in the Olympics? Would that be bigger than – we're not talking team sports here at all.
Not team sports, no. I think so. I think winning track – in winning individual track races, that's not easy. That's hard to do, especially when you're in the Olympics and playing against running against the best in the world. I mean, that's hard to win those. But I think winning a tennis match after tennis match after tennis match to get to the finals of a Grand Slam, of a major, I think is harder because you've got to win a bunch of games in that match and beat some good players. Yesterday, Kevin Anderson, who was seeded 28th in the U.S. Open, beat the 12th seed. Kevin's number 32 overall in the country. I think that it is. If he can win tomorrow, again, he's the first Illini tennis player to reach a Grand Slam final. I think it could be if he. I think he might be individual champion. I think he might be the.
Yeah,
toughest.
If anybody can think of a bigger
one, please do.
I'd like to know who it
this
is.
This is all off the top of our head here. Trying
Peter,
to think.
Peter made a nice run in the Masters, and of course, Stricker's made a lot of runs,
yes.
But he's never won one. Never won a Grand Slam, that is. So this might be the question. When we start talking about track, we're going back, you know, half a century and more.
And you've got more knowledge on
century.
That than I do just because of, you know.
But, I think this might be it.
Well,
I don't think he's going to be – probably not going to be able to pull it off, is he?
Rafael Nadal's one of the best tennis players ever. He's one of the best.
Boy, his serve, though, he had – 100, let's see, he had 123, he had 103 serves yesterday and won 80 of them.
Jeez, that's an
individual amazing. Services.
Well, I did not get
when
to watch.
When he's serving, he's murder.
I did not get to watch yesterday because I was here working in the newsroom, and then I had to run a couple of errands before the volleyball match, and so then I missed the entire match for Kevin Anderson, but again, he beat Pablo Carreño Busta last night to advance to the Grand Slam final, the U.S. Open final, tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. He is the first player with college ties, so I'll mention this again, to reach a Grand Slam singles final since Todd Martin of Northwestern in 1999, which was also the U.S. Open, and he's the highest seeded player in U.S. Open history to reach the singles final. Let's just
breaking new ground, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And also, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and it's a little interesting fact, not really that big of a deal. Tallest major finalist ever, as well as 6'8".
But can you believe it? We've got two guys 31 years old in the finals.
That's I'm surprised that Federer got knocked out when he did. He's been playing tennis forever and ever. I mean, it's look at Serena Williams, look at Venus Williams. They're still going. Now Serena's having
isn't
a baby.
That something?
They're just still going and going. I mean, these tennis players are they're. It's amazing, and Kevin Anderson, congratulations to him. Let's take a timeout. We'll get Dave Revson in. He's going to be on the call for the Illini in Western Kentucky tonight over at Memorial Stadium. He's coming up next here on DWS.
Tonight at 5 on the News Gazette sports page as the group returns to the Esquire in downtown Champaign. 5 o'clock Monday, the News Gazette sports page at the Esquire.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for listening today. Now joining us on the Big Ten Network, Dave Revson. Give a follow on Twitter at BTN Dave Revson. Dave, how are you this morning?
I'm good. What's up, Michael? What's up, Lauren? How are you guys?
Not too bad. Ready for the big game, Memorial Stadium tonight. We always like night games here. It's just a great atmosphere, and just Memorial Stadium under the lights is a really great place to be. Let's just get right to it. In Western Kentucky, they got a really talented quarterback, but he's lost some offensive line members from last year, as well as two wide receivers, but still a good quarterback in Mike White nonetheless.
Yeah, he is really good. He is, I think, you know, has a good enough arm probably to be at least a marginal pro prospect. He's pretty impressive on film. You know, I would agree with you. There is the issue of what they've lost, and it's significant. I mean, they lost two receivers who combined for over 3,000 receiving yards last year, which is crazy, including one of them, Tywan Taylor, who ended up being drafted in the third round. They lost Forrest Lamp, who a lot of people thought was among the better offensive line prospects into the draft. He ended up dropping a little bit, but he was still a second-round pick. They lost a running back who ran for 27 touchdowns last year, which was the most of any player in FBS. So this is not nearly as potent an offense. And then I'd say the other thing they lost, which is really significant, is Jeff Brohm. And all you have to do is turn on the TV and watch what Purdue did last night and how impressive they are to understand the impact Jeff Brohm had. He has left. He was the head coach, now coaching the Boilermakers. So this is not the same team that led the nation in scoring a year ago, but they do have a really talented quarterback in White.
Yeah, we mentioned, we had Jay Lehman on in the first hour, and he mentioned Jeff Brohm being a really big difference as well, which is going to be pretty obvious, I think, as we move through the season for Purdue. What did you see from the Illini when you were getting ready for the game this week? The offensive line was a concern. Chase Crouch was running for his life at times, and so wasn't able to get as comfortable as you'd like to see him be. But you know, Mike Epstein looked good in the backfield, but they've got to really shore up that offensive line and give him some more time, Crouch some more time to throw the football.
Yeah, they definitely need to work on the O-line, no question. And obviously now you've got Kramer hurt, and so you're kind of juggling. I'm sure you guys are aware of this, but nobody is going to start this game at the same position that they started last week on the offensive line. Now, part of that is you get Palcheski back, and you know Palcheski was a starter in camp until he got hurt. So, I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you're getting one piece back that you were counting on. But losing another in Kramer, moving Allegretti back over to center where he has played, but I think they feel like, you know, they really like him as a guard. So, I don't know. The offensive line, there were a couple series there last week where you just kind of, you know, shake your head a little bit. I think Allegretti's a really good player. DeLauro's a good player. But, you know, the pieces haven't fit together yet, and they are really young there, and that is a challenging place to be young, as you guys are well aware. I mean, there's a reason that generally you want to have upperclassmen playing on the line. It's just, when you're that big in high school, you know, like a guy like Larry Boyd, I mean, you just kind of lean on people and you kind of think you're doing your job because you're so much bigger. There's so much technique to O-line play and, you know, getting low and all of those kinds of things. And I just think that comes with time. So that's not to say he's not eventually going to be a good player because I think he's going to be all Big Ten. I just don't think he's going to be this year. And so that's the challenge of playing young linemen.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the playmakers for Illinois. Epstein is going to start this week, we understand. And
yep.
This is just a few weeks after, Kendrick Foster was in Chicago as one of the representatives for the University of Illinois, as though he would be a team leader. And I think he is a team leader verbally, but it looks like Epstein might have slipped ahead of him. What do you think?
Well, he definitely has. I mean, that's what Derek McGee told us yesterday and what Lovey said as well, that Epstein is going to start. But one of the things that Derek said is that he spent some time with Kendrick Foster this week and basically said to him, hey, Kendrick Foster carried this team last year, and we're counting on you. And he said that really brightened Kendrick Foster up. It kind of got him feeling like, hey, I'm still an important part of this team. But Epstein gave them a spark last week, and I think they just feel like, and this is part of the whole philosophy, Lauren, I mean, you guys, I'm sure know the stat, right, that they had started 12 true freshmen in the opener over the last 42 years, basically since freshman eligibility was restored, and they started three last week. They're going to start maybe as many as six today. And Lovey just said yesterday, look, I'm going to play the best guys. And right now I think Epstein gives us the best chance to win, and he certainly played well last week, so I think it's kind of hard to argue with that. And, you know, I respect that. I mean, to me as a coach, you've got to do whatever you feel like puts your team in the best position. And why wouldn't you go with the people you think do that? And Epstein was better last week than Foster. It's not necessarily an indictment of Kendrick as much as it is an acknowledgement of how well Mike Epstein played. And let's just go with the hot hand. And you know you have a really good back in Foster that you're going to need. I mean, there is no team that only plays one running back during the course of a year.
Absolutely.
You know, you're going to need both those guys. And you'll probably use them both tonight. And I think they may use Ravon Bonner tonight too, guys. I think, you know, he was really good in camp, and they were excited about him. So I think we'll see him as well. I think we'll see all three of those guys.
Well, as you analyze the Western Division of the Big Ten, has anything changed for you? I mean, Purdue looked awfully good last night.
Yeah.
And of course Maryland isn't in our division, but Maryland's off to an awfully good start with a win over Texas. Your thoughts about this? Just keep it to the Western Division.
Yeah, I think clearly Purdue changes the equation, right? I mean, I understand it was just Ohio U, but you know, they played really well against Louisville. I mean, they're pretty good guys. Like, are they going to challenge to win the division? No, I don't think so. I think Wisconsin, I've said this all along. I mean, when we saw Wisconsin, they're just a cut above everyone else. And anyone, you know, like their Northwestern was a fashionable pick, I think, for a lot of people. To me, I mean, that's not to say Northwestern couldn't beat Wisconsin, but I'm not convinced they're going to beat Duke today. I mean, they do not have a very good offensive line. And they haven't for years. So I don't understand how you can pick them over Wisconsin. I don't understand how you can pick Nebraska over Wisconsin, you know, with that defense. I just think Wisconsin right now is far and away, clear-cut, the best of those teams in that division. And then after that, I think you have a bunch of teams jockeying. And to me, what has changed is that I think you have to include Purdue in that discussion. I mean, I think they have proven here over the first two games that they're worthy of being in that next group, which to me, you know, includes Nebraska and includes Northwestern, maybe includes Iowa. I mean, they're in that discussion, guys.
But they're not in the, you don't feel like Minnesota and Illinois are in that discussion?
Well, not based on what I saw from the first week, but that's not to say it can't change. I mean,
I think that's fair.
I don't.
I'm not bashful about saying they haven't shown enough yet. I mean, Illinois hadn't.
Right.
I think certainly Illinois
didn't in the opener, right? I mean, you have 216 yards of offense.
Yeah.
Fewest they've had in a win in 20 years. So, yeah, I mean, that's not to say teams get better. And so I think tonight, I know everyone's picking Western Kentucky. I think Illinois is going to win. I'd be surprised if they don't. I think they have the better team. So, I'm high on Illinois, but do I think they can compete for the division? I really don't right now. I'd love to be wrong because, you know, I think the conference is better with a really good Illinois team. Illinois is a team that, you know, historically has made some noise, and so we need to get back to that point where Illinois is competitive and good.
I'm going to switch you back a little bit to the 10th anniversary. How did all that go to realize now and it's all settled in? And 10 years, the Big Ten Network, and you've been there the whole time.
It was really fun to talk about it with you on the podcast, Lauren, and it really got me thinking a lot about those 10 years and kind of everything that's happened. And it's just been really exciting. I'm not going to lie to you. There was a very sentimental component of it to me. That day in particular, you know, I wrote a story that was on BTN.com about as the network was, as I got my offer from the network, my father was literally dying. And, unfortunately, he was alive, but had been sedated, and so I had gotten this offer, and I couldn't tell him about it, and I couldn't tell him that we were going to be home. And I wrote that piece. It got an incredible reception, on Twitter and stuff, a lot of people kind of telling me how much they enjoyed it. And so that was really hard, you know, like that part of it. And then additive to that was kind of that journey that we've experienced, and we had a really nice party that night, and so to spend time talking to Mike Hall and Rick Pizzo, who were there from the beginning, and Jerry and Howard, who were there from the beginning, and Mark Silverman, who's the president, and Jim Delaney, and all these people about kind of this journey we've been on for 10 years. I think you added all that together, and it was a really emotional day for me. It really caught me off guard. But it's been incredibly rewarding. You know, it's neat just being out today. You know, I ran by the stadium and everything, and, you know, there had to be four or five people who are out tailgating. You're like, hey, Dave, you know, and you just realize that the Big Ten network is really part of the fabric of Big Ten country. And we weren't 10 years ago. You know, 10 years ago, I could have gone jogging in Champaign and no one would have said my name, and that would have been fine.
I don't know about that.
But, I mean, it's not, I don't need that for affirmation in my life. But I think it shows you the impact that the network has made, right? And that we're important to the fabric of Illinois athletics, and we're important to the fabric of Big Ten athletics. And that's what we strive to be. And so that means something to me.
Dave Revson, give him a follow on Twitter at BTN Dave Revson. Well, you know, I got a chance to read the piece that you wrote. I thought it was really good as well. And one thing that, you're welcome. And I looked back at the studio changes, which you mentioned, and how the studio looked then and how it looks now. And yeah, I watched the video, the first opening statement you made. But just how has the studio and the environment at the Big Ten changed from in the last 10 years? It just looks, and even the logo looks dramatically different.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a better look, although I will say this. You know, one of the things we were really fortunate about, Michael, was that we launched in HD, as a fully HD network, and now we all take HD for granted. But that was a time of transition, and there were a lot of events at that point that were not in HD, sporting events on TV. There were studio shows that were not in HD. And so the fact that we launched in HD and that they made that decision to commit to that financially, where you would have had to transition anyway, I mean, it was the direction it was going. But I think it looks better than it would have looked had we launched 12 years ago, right? We were really in an important spot of transition there, and so I think that helped us immensely. But anyway, it does look better now. I think we've evolved as a studio show. You know, particularly like the stuff that I do with Howard and Jerry. But I think a lot of it is similar. I think we were pretty good from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they hired good people who understood television. And so I don't have any embarrassment over what we did early. And I'm not suggesting that you said we did. But I do think the look's better. I think the logo's better. I think it's crisper. But I'm proud of where we've been. I'm proud of what we've done. We've had moments I'd certainly like to have back here and there. But in general, I think it's been a pretty good network from day one, and I'm really proud to have been a part of it from day one.
Well, I'll agree with the talent that you've had in that time. It's just been, you know, big name people on basketball and football side, and I think that really helped you guys from the beginning and just have, you know, an appeal for people like, oh, hey, I know Howard Griffith, or hey, I you know, and all the other guys you had, Jerry DiNardo, people recognize those people.
Yeah, they committed to getting good people right away. You know, myself excluded. I mean, you know, they rolled the dice on me, but the rest of those guys, you know, no, they really did. I mean, they committed. They said, like, and you know, I mean, I'm not bashful in admitting this or whatever. I had a role in getting Jerry there. You know, I'd worked with him at ESPN. I thought he was really good, and we had done the ESPN Radio College Game Day show for 2 years, and. You know, I advocated really hard for him. I knew he'd be good. And then Lauren and I talked about this on the podcast. I didn't know Howard at all, and I saw a DVD of him doing some work on Broncos television and just thought, wow, this guy would be awesome. And, of course, I knew him as a player. We're contemporaries in terms of the time we were in school, and so I know how good he was and you know, felt like, wow, this would be really good. And then that worked from day one. I mean, the chemistry of the three of us really worked. We just liked each other a lot. I think that we all had a similar work ethic and a desire to make it good. There was no one who didn't take it seriously. And I think that has been a huge part of our success, because as big as basketball is, and basketball is big, I'd still say football probably drives the bus in college athletics. And you know, all you have to do is look at the expansion talks when, you know, there was thought the Big 12 might dissolve and no one knew where Kansas was going to go, right? No one wanted them. And you think, well, how can no one want Kansas, one of the five greatest basketball programs of all time, probably? Well, you know, basketball isn't as big a deal as football, and it, you know, it doesn't get the same ratings and whatever. So we had to be good in football right away. We really had to excel, and I thought we did. You know, I thought we did with the play-by-play choices they made, you know, having Tom Brenneman calling games right away. And I thought we did with studio as well. I just feel really good about where we were from square one, and it's continued. And I give a ton of credit to them and their commitment to putting a good product on the air.
Football is so huge, and I have so little time, and you have so little time to answer this question, but I'm reading so much in the Chicago paper and all over the country, the Washington Post, about CTE and how there will be fewer young people playing and how this will impact such a colossal business as football is. How do you see the long range? How do you see this developing long range?
Well, it's interesting. I'm a big podcast listener, and so on my run this morning, there were two podcasts in my queue. One of them was Ed Cunningham on the Richard Deitch podcast with Sports Illustrated, where he was talking about his decision to step away as a football color analyst.
Right.
Because he felt like he couldn't promote the sport anymore. And then the other one was a Freakonomics podcast, and it happened to be John Urschel. So it was like I was inundated with it this morning. And John Urschel, of course, was an offensive lineman at Penn State. He's a brilliant guy. He's getting a PhD in math at MIT. And he was playing for the Ravens, and after 4 years, he made the same decision. He decided to step away, in part because he had some fear about the long-term effects of the game. You know, I'll say this. As you guys, I think, both know, I wrote a book on the early history of college football called The Opening Kickoff, The Tumultuous Birth of a Football Nation. And the culmination of the book, it focuses on college football from 1890 to 1915. And basically the thesis is that everything that was going on in college football then parallels things that are going on in the game today. And so to understand where we are today, you have to understand that pivotal 25 years. And so I did a lot of research on it. And as people know, I think a lot of people know, that in 1905 there was a huge crisis and Teddy Roosevelt intervened. I feel like his role was somewhat overstated in terms of people say he saved the game. He didn't save the game. But he helped them save the game, and the game was extremely violent, and people were literally dying on the field. And so one of the things that they did was they opened the game up, and they introduced the forward pass, and there was incredible resistance to the forward pass from a lot of the powers that be, primarily Walter Camp, because Walter Camp had the best team in the country at that time at Yale, and his offense was predicated on things where if they brought in the forward pass, he thought his competitive advantage would dissipate, and so he resisted it. And so what's really interesting, and, you know, basically they ran an end around him in the rules committee and basically said, to heck with you, we're doing what we think is right for the game. And so I think the game has survived bigger crises than this. The reason I bring this up is that 1905 crisis, I think this is the biggest crisis since then in the sport. And what the people in the game did at that point was they got together and said, we need to save this game because it's important to the fabric of the country. And it's far more important now to the fabric of the country and to the university system and to all these different components. But I think it may take some radical changes in the game. And I think it may take people who are in the game deep to say, we need to make some tough decisions. And maybe we eliminate the kickoff. And, you know, what are the different things that we can do? Maybe kids don't start tackling till they're 16 years old. I mean, maybe that's part of it. And I know that's hard. Those are hard decisions. But it wouldn't, I think, to keep the game that people love and that is important to the fabric of the country, that binds communities together, that binds universities together, all of those components of it, I think it's important to take a hard look at the game. And that's what they did in 1905. And I think we're heading in a direction. And I give credit to a lot of different groups that have already started doing this. Now, the Big Ten's involved in a lot of brain research with the Ivy League. There are a lot of people who are focused on this right now, and I think that's a positive step to take, and I think there are more steps that are going to be taken here down the road.
Well, Dave, we're really short on time, and so I want to ask you real quick, the Ohio State-Oklahoma game tonight is a huge game.
Yeah, no doubt, and it'll be interesting. Obviously, for us, we're going to be calling the Illinois game. I'll certainly, out of the corner of my eye, be looking at the score to see what's going on there in Columbus. It is a huge game. What I find really interesting in that game, there are two things. The first one is how much better Ohio State secondary will play than it did 10 days ago. They'll need to be better against Baker Mayfield. He's fabulous. So I'm a little concerned about the Buckeyes secondary. And then I do feel like their greatest competitive advantage is their defensive line is fabulous guys. It is so good. But Oklahoma may have the best offensive line in the country. So does that negate Ohio State's greatest strength? So that head-to-head matchup is interesting. I'll be fascinated to kind of see where the Buckeyes are. This is a great measuring stick.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for your time this morning. We appreciate it. We'll see you at the stadium tonight.
Okay, can't wait. Thanks,
hey,
Michael.
Thanks,
Lauren. Take care, guys.
Yep. Dave Refson of the Big Ten Network on the call with Jade Lehman tonight. We'll take our final timeout and come back and wrap up the show here on DWS.
It's Illinois football tonight at 7 as the Illini host Western Kentucky at Memorial Stadium. 7 o'clock kickoff, 5:30 Illini game day with Scott Beatty here on DWS.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Indeed, Illini football tonight against Western Kentucky. Can the Illini go 2-0 to start the 2017 season? Two quick texts I want to get out of the way from JB on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. So Lauren hit two home runs over a center fielder's head who had bad knees. Did the pitcher have a disability too?
Whittaker was a great athlete at the time.
Bill texted, I find it hard to believe Josh supported the censorship. I guess we'll have to toe the company line sometimes. If he truly supported the ban, he's not the guy I thought he is. Thought we hired a coach smart enough to can the swinging gate. I mean, reference to the two-point conversion. So teams have to prepare for it. Big deal we have to waste time practicing it. Oh, well, football is a dead man walking anyway. I give it 10 years tops. That's Bill on the Castle Heating Cooling text line. And, Lauren, I wanted to mention, people may not see, you know, the true freshman numbers across the country. Illinois played they played 12 true freshmen. They didn't start 12. They played 12. Georgia led the country with 17. LSU and Miami also played 17 true freshmen last week. Arizona with 13. Illinois right with the big boys in terms of playing true freshmen. However, the SEC schools are playing true freshmen that are on a higher level in terms of talent.
And Illinois didn't play as many true freshmen last week as we thought they would.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't play Bonner. They didn't play Pelsuski. They didn't play several others that we thought were going to play. And they will play this week. But the difference, I think, is, and you can say they played. Well, I want to know how much they played. Were they on special teams? Were they starting?
True.
I mean, Illinois got six possible starters today, true freshmen. And we're talking about true, not redshirt freshmen, true.
They played. They started three true freshmen last week. Thanks to Kevin Hambley today of Stanford, Jay Lehman, former Illini and Big Ten Network analyst, and Dave Refson as well for joining us on the program. Thanks so much for your phone calls and your texts today. Have a great weekend, everybody. Illinois volleyball coming up this afternoon. Central Illinois business is next here on DWS.